Sea Realm Vault Podcast, episode number 303. Wednesday, July 25th, 2018.
The light of consciousness shines on everyone, but not everyone gains access to the vault.
As most of you know, I live in a proper village, Bellows Falls, Vermont, which is one of two villages inside of a town called Rockingham. You probably also know that I'm involved with a program called COSA, which stands for Circles of Support and Accountability, and that I meet once a week with other volunteers and a young man who was fairly recently released from prison. He's doing quite well. He's working, he's staying sober, he's staying fit. And basically, he's on track to make parole. He has a hearing coming up soon. And he seems like a, fingers crossed, knock wood, a success story. He lives at a place here in town, and when I say in town, I mean here in the village of Bellows Falls, called the Rise House, which is operated by a large nationwide organization called Phoenix House. Reading from the Phoenix House website, this is just their happy face description of what they do. Who we are. Phoenix House provides individualized, holistic drug and alcohol addiction treatment with a legacy spanning 50 years. We are committed to treating the whole person and their families with caring, qualified professionals in the fields of psychiatry, medicine, mental health, social work, education, and recovery support. Our team of experts address underlying causes of substance abuse and behavioral patterns to guide patients toward lasting recovery. Under their mission section is, we are passionate about healing individuals, families, and communities challenged by substance use disorders and related mental health conditions. So, the Phoenix Rise House here in town, it provides very, very affordable lodging, but also strictly monitored and controlled lodging for young men who have gotten out of prison, or who are in some other way under the watchful guidance of the Department of Corrections here in Vermont. This episode of the Sea Realm Vault podcast, unlike most recent episodes, actually features an interview. I recorded it here in Bellows Falls yesterday, and the person that I interviewed, his name is Darren, he describes the Rise House, which he has always just called the Phoenix House, as basically a frat house. Lots of young men coming and going, milling about. And he lives quite near it, and whether that sounds prejudicial or not is not really for me to say. Very near where Darren lives and where the Phoenix House is, or the Rise House, is another place which I have only heard referred to by its street address, 99 Atkinson Street. Until very recently, it was a group home for adults with, and then, you know, pick your phrase with care, learning disabilities, mental disabilities, disorders, learning challenges, basically for adults, many of them older adults, who, you know, for one reason or another, need to live in a situation where they can get help with the aspects of daily life that most of us do unaided. That facility recently closed, and I'm not sure if it was due to or as a response to the death of one of their residents, but one of their residents did recently die under circumstances which smack of negligence. But the man that I talked to yesterday for this episode of the podcast, he discovered that Phoenix House is going to be moving one of their programs, which is currently located down in Brattleboro, Vermont. It's about a half hour south of here. It's a much bigger municipality than Bellows Falls. And there is we have a building here that we call the hospital. It's in the same parking lot as my apartment. And to me, it is not a hospital. It is, at best, a doctor's office. I mean, it's a very small, very rudimentary medical facility. But down in Brattleboro, they have something more akin to what I would consider to be a proper hospital. And attached to it is an organization called The Retreat. And The Retreat is where a lot of people go for detox from heroin. Probably more people detox from heroin in jail, under rather harsh conditions. But the lucky ones get to detox at the retreat. Well, Phoenix House has a program for women called Tapestry, and the Tapestry portion of the Phoenix House operation housed at the retreat is it's in its final days. Phoenix House and the retreat are parting company. And they're giving contradictory statements, public statements, about why that is. So Phoenix House plans to move this recovery program for women with substance abuse issues from Brattleboro, Vermont, to the village of Bellows Falls into 99 Atkinson Street. And Darren, who is what's called the abutter, the person who has the property right next door to 99 Atkinson Street, discovered this, voiced some concerns, and got in touch with a newspaper reporter in Brattleboro, a reporter for the Brattleboro Reformer, and he was recently featured on the front page of the Brattleboro Reformer in an article written by a reporter to whom he expressed his concerns about this program, moving drug addicts into our village of Bellows Falls. Also, there is a Facebook group, and you can go and look at it. It is called The Future of Bellows Falls, and I discovered this before I moved to Bellows Falls because there were a lot of people there expressing their anger and their resistance to the county sheriff, Keith Clark, building what he called a justice center here in Bellows Falls, converting an old abandoned mill building into a multi-purpose justice center that would make money with a contract with the Federal Marshal Service to house some of their federal prisoners. And to my outsider's eye, just reading the discussions going on there, there was some very ugly talk being thrown around about those people and how we don't want any more of those people here in our village. So the gentleman I talked to yesterday, Darren, he posted something to this group, The Future of Bellows Falls, and in it he described Bellows Falls as a poverty-stricken community, which it is. And somebody in the other village in our town, Saxons River, took offense at that. And I won't steal Darren's thunder and tell you her exact motivations for getting bent out of shape at his description of Bellows Falls as being poverty-stricken. But Darren is a participant in this ongoing discussion about the new Phoenix House program, proposed Phoenix House program, for the building right next door to his house. And he has been criticized for not having any sympathy for people struggling with opiate addiction. When you hear Darren talk in this interview, just ask yourself if he sounds like a cruel and callous person. Somebody else who frequently posts to The Future of Bellows Falls, a guy named Michael, he is a photographer, and largely, when topics like this are not raging, what he posts to Facebook are very beautiful pictures of some of the very beautiful buildings here in Bellows Falls. And Michael writes, "The proposed Phoenix House will dump a huge load of even more, all caps, more, drug addicts into the Bellows Falls community. Those who care about the quality of life here and oppose this project will be falsely accused of being heartless, terrible people. We all know this is total BS. In truth, our opposition is based on the fact that our tiny community cannot support any more of the undesirable projects that continually get dumped on Bellows Falls. Caring citizens are constantly faced with a battle of fighting off one thing or another that threatens to degrade our quality of life here in the village. Surrounding communities support Bellows Falls as a dumping ground because they don't want it in their own backyard. There seems to be an agenda on the state level to force Bellows Falls to endure the stigma of being the armpit of Vermont. We won't stand for it. Every citizen of Bellows Falls, our children, and our families deserve better." Triple exclamation point. "It's time, once again, people, to stand up and fight. Let's talk about it." And then he posted with that an infographic which states that 40 to 60% of people with addiction slide back into drug use after rehab. Now, if you search around for media stories about Phoenix House, you won't find much. Part of that, and this is a much bigger issue than I can go into in this podcast, but part of that is a result of the proliferation of drug rehab programs in the wake of the passage of Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act mandated that insurance had to pay for drug rehabilitation, and since that time, an entire industry has popped up, basically finding drug addicts with insurance. And drug addicts is a very loose term there. basically anybody with insurance who could plausibly be considered, or maybe even implausibly be considered, an addict, gets recruited by a network of telemarketers who, you know, equipped with data that they buy, are calling, looking for those warm bodies to go to the ever-proliferating treatment programs, which are supposed to provide 40 hours of some sort of therapeutic activity to their residents every week, but which, in many cases, simply warehouse them, and in the worst cases, abuse them. So one of the few stories out there specifically about Phoenix House is one that was on Reuters.com. It's called How a Respected Drug Rehab Program Spun Out of Control. And it's not about Phoenix House in Vermont, but about Phoenix House in upstate New York, which is a neighboring state. It is an adjacent state. The state agency which is tasked with overseeing these sorts of operations, in New York State at least, is called the Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services, or OASAS. So I didn't see this article until after I recorded the conversation you're about to hear. So I didn't know these specifics going into the conversation with Darren. But reading from this Reuters article, Phoenix House of New York is 95% publicly funded and enjoys star-studded endorsements. Beyonce donated a cosmetology center at a Brooklyn facility. Financier Pete Peterson chaired a summer fundraiser in 2013 in the posh Hamptons on New York's Long Island. But, as in the case of Martin, a young man whose involvement with Phoenix House and subsequent death is detailed here in this article, but as the case of Martin suggests, the system as practiced doesn't always deliver on the promise in principle. A review of Martin's journal and letters, and of state regulators' reports, as well as interviews with dozens of current and former Phoenix House employees and residents, reveal a respected institution that, in recent years, has consistently failed to provide the quality of care necessary to help addicts kick the habit. The closures that preceded Martin's arrival weren't the last, and nor is Belterra, the specific Phoenix House location being reported on here, but nor is Belterra an anomaly. In November of last year, OASAS suspended admissions to Belterra and four other Phoenix Houses of New York facilities. In a letter to Phoenix House's then chief executive in November 2014, OASAS said Phoenix House had, quote, persistent regulatory violations and resident patient care concerns dating back several years, close quote. An OASAS site report of the five facilities went into graphic detail. The regulators' findings at some or all of these facilities included the use of marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and other illegal drugs, sexual activity among the residents, reports of violence and sexual assault, insufficient, inadequately trained, or abusive staff, dirty premises, and lax security, with residents coming and going as they wished. So I'll stop there, but again, this is from a Reuters story. You can find it on Reuters.com. The story is called How a Respected Drug Rehab Program Spun Out of Control. So before I play the conversation that I recorded with Darren, I should mention that we recorded this at the radio station, but just using my own field recorder, sitting at a table next to a big stack of servers and other equipment, which hummed and whined and whatnot. So I got some room tone, which is to say I recorded just the sound of the room without he or I talking or moving around. And I tried to filter that out of the recording, but the recording sounds as if there was some electronic interference, as if Darren's cell phone was positioned on the table right next to the recorder. I didn't see that to be the case, and I normally look out for that. So I've cleaned up the recording as best I can, but as anybody out there who does audio engineering or audio editing knows, the more noise removal and other adjustments that you make to an audio recording in order to clean it up, the more unintentional audio artifacts you introduce into it. So there comes a point of diminishing returns. There are good sections of the recording, there are sections of the recording that are not so great, and then there are sections of the recording that I had to just edit out entirely, even though the content was good. Fortunately, one of those sections was one where basically Darren wasn't saying anything and I was kind of on a long tear talking about things that you've heard me talk about before. So if any part of the conversation was going to be sacrificed, any part of the recording, I'm glad it was that part. So we spoke for a little over an hour, and what you're going to get here is about 47 minutes of that hour. So here is my conversation with Darren Lenoir, and I use his last name because he has spoken about this to a reporter who used his first and last name and his photograph on the front page of a recent issue of a local newspaper. So here's my conversation with Darren.
Darren Lenoir, you have lived in Bellows Falls for how long?
Close to 20 years.
And you're a homeowner here in town?
Absolutely.
What part of town do you live in?
I live on the Atkinson William Street neighborhoods.
So most of the people listening to this don't live in this area. And they've heard me talk about Bellows Falls for the past couple of years, but they don't have much of a visual. How would you describe the area of town that you live in?
My particular section of town is low income, many multifamily unit homes that are being rented to people with subsidies for good cause. A lot have disabilities. A lot of them are sick, disabled. But it's also a very nice part of town. You know, there's a lot of single family homes there, a lot of successful people as well, but there is a concentration of poverty in my neck of town.
And just to get technical for a minute, we both live in Bellows Falls, which is an incorporated village inside of a larger town of Rockingham. But when we say the town, we're talking about the village.
Absolutely. Sometimes I misstate that. It's complicated.
It is.
Even after 20 years.
So, are you familiar with the Rise House?
I am not.
You're not. Okay. The Rise House, maybe you know it by a different name, but it's a home, or I guess it's a home. It is a building that provides housing to mostly people who are out of jail or prison on furlough. It's, I think, over by near Lee Size.
If it's the facility that's on Underhill Avenue, I know it as the Phoenix House.
Okay, it is run by the Phoenix House. That's the Phoenix House is the larger organization. Rise, I think, is the name of their housing and recovery assistance program for men. They have another one for women. They have a couple for women, but the one that is of interest to us is called
Tapestry,
right. Would you describe what your impression of 99 Atkinson Street, what that's been up until recently?
99 Atkinson Street has been a assisted living facility for people with mental deficiencies for as long as I've been in town, and I hear 10 years prior to that. So it has been there for 30 years. I have a lot of close contact with the former residents there because I used to own a house directly across the street. Now I own a house two houses up. They were very good neighbors. They would come and go. There were a lot of medical calls to that facility, but you'd never hear what those medical calls would be for.
Right.
But in short, they were good neighbors. They were quiet. Never had a complaint with them.
So did you know the older gentleman who got taken up to Springfield and never brought back?
I knew Neil well. He used to walk up and down our street, William Street, picking up trash, picking up bottles and cans, and he was a ever-present sight in our community.
What's your understanding as to what happened to him?
My understanding was that he had an appointment here at the health center in Rockingham, Bellows Falls, and somehow there was some confusion, and he went to the Springfield Hospital. And because his appointment was not there, and with his mental health deficiency, he didn't know exactly what to do. And being left on his own, apparently he went out and sat in Colbert and died from the elements.
The way I heard the story was that he was sitting in the medical center there, basically in the waiting room on the bench for many hours, and was told to leave.
That's the first I've heard that, but that would not surprise me.
Well, don't take that as gospel. That's just what I heard. So now 99 Atkinson Street is going to be changing its character, or its mission. And the Tapestry setup, which is now down in Brattleboro, is going to be moved up here. And I go to all of the select board meetings and the trustees meetings because I work for Fact TV and I'm there to shoot video. But, you know, I'm there and I hear what they're talking about, and they talk about, you know, pretty much the same things all the time. But when I first moved to Bellows Falls, it was right around the time when Sheriff Clark was trying to turn the old paper mill into what he called the Justice Center.
The Justice Center.
Yeah. And there was a lot of pushback from Bellows Falls residents to that project.
Myself being one of them.
Yeah. Well, what was your motivation in pushing back against that?
I didn't think it was a good project for our community. Mm-hmm. We're struggling here with many socioeconomic factors and the presence of people caught up in the legal system here in Bellows Falls was not good for us and potentially not good for them. At that time, I had an apartment house across from the school, and I was worried about the children and the exposure that these types of facilities bring. And of course, I just didn't think it was a good placement down by the beautiful scenic Connecticut River. The project did not seem appropriate for the village of Bellows Falls.
I have to say, that building is pretty much an eyesore, and it's one of the first things you see as you're driving into town from the south, or as you're driving by over on the New Hampshire side. It kind of stands out as a derelict building.
It's a very large, unoccupied building in disrepair,
yeah,
to say the least.
So the first I heard of the Phoenix House Tapestry Program moving into 99 Atkinson Street was a couple weeks back at a trustees meeting. One of the trustees, just out of the blue, it wasn't on the agenda. He just decided to voice his concern about, bringing more people involved with the criminal justice system into our town or our village. And he was clearly, without any reservation, opposed to the idea. And when I first was thinking about moving to Bellows Falls and I got involved with the Future of Bellows Falls Facebook group, it was Deb Wright who was really leading the charge there against the Liberty Mills Justice Center. And a phrase that kept coming up over and over again, which rubbed me the wrong way, was those people. We don't want any more of those people in our village. And given that you live in close proximity to those people, and I imagine you don't have any ill will toward them, how does that phrase rub up against you?
Well, unfortunately, I use that phrase myself.
Okay.
For lack of a better term.
Right.
I do not know how to categorize different groups of people. So when you have an element like that coming in, I don't know how to say it other than that facility or those people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not that I'm saying that in a negative manner. I just don't know an alternative phrase that I should be using.
Right. And, any really descriptive phrase is going to be a mouthful. And if it doesn't have any tinge of negativity to it, it's probably going to sound like a euphemism. Maybe you're walking on eggshells. So, we come face to face and make peace with those people as a phrase. There are already a lot of those people in Bellows Falls. Before I moved here, actually, I was visiting Bellows Falls and I interviewed Ray Masuko. You know that name?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Ray, yeah. Ray's a popular figure here in town.
He is. He's an attorney, and he has represented just about everybody at one point or another, so he says. And he's also employed by the town, so I see him a lot at various meetings. And Ray related to me, and he said it, with the recorder running, so I'm not, I'm not betraying any trust. He says there's a bit of a conspiracy theory here in Bellows Falls, particularly among the homeowners and, property taxpayers, that the state deliberately sends those people to Bellows Falls. And part of the reason is we have so many big homes which have been broken up into, multi-unit dwellings. And a lot of the people living in those dwellings are getting state assistance to pay those rents. A lot of those landlords don't live in town, so it's no skin off their nose or their back if, more of those people come into the village. And, for property owners and then homeowners here, if you need to leave, it makes your house less valuable and makes it harder to sell.
Absolutely.
So all of that is true, clearly true. The one part that's questionable is it a deliberate effort on the part of Mount Pilier to basically sacrifice Bellows Falls in order to keep other parts of the state more, unburdened by those people.
I had a long conversation with a woman in town yesterday who works closely with Vermont government, and she believes exactly that, that Bellows Falls is becoming a dumping ground, for lack of a better term, for these types of facilities and organizations because of our large number of housing and the willingness of local landlords to accept state and government vouchers for housing.
All right, so there's one point for the conspiracy theory, I guess.
More than once.
Yeah, all right. Well, one thing we haven't mentioned at all in our conversation so far, but which, of course, is a huge, huge factor in everybody's lives around here, is heroin and drug addiction. People struggling with drug addiction and organizations and people doing their best to help those people.
Substance abuse has a big part here in the community.
How long has that been the case?
I would imagine since the beginning, at least the 20 years that I've been here.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any intensifying, of this problem, or has it changed in the way it presents itself to you?
I think the heroin epidemic is bringing substance abuse right to the forefront, right into everybody's homes. It's no longer one of those taboo subjects that nobody will talk about. It's in the paper. It's in the news. It's a national epidemic. And we are suffering here in Bellows Falls because of the low income, because of the disparity that I see on a daily basis.
So I think we've laid the groundwork, and I imagine you've been thinking about the things you wanted to vent about. So consider this next question the tee up for that. Maybe the day before, on the Future of Bellows Falls group on Facebook. And you had mentioned, and it didn't seem at all controversial to me, that Bellows Falls is already struggling with poverty. In fact, I think the phrase you used was poverty-stricken community.
And I may have overstated that because I was actually attacked for using that statement.
Okay. Did you know the person who objected to your use of that statement?
I did not know her personally, but since she came and knocked on my door, I do know her now.
Okay. So that's a little bit more than your typical Facebook response.
I actually invited her to come sit on my lawn and to see the poverty that I see every day. I live in one of the pockets that are less fortunate here in the Bellows Falls area. And I see the disability, the sadness, the people not working, drug addiction, people in need of services. It's heavy here. It's heavy.
So the person who didn't like your use of that phrase, does she live in Bellows Falls?
She lives in Saxon River.
Ah, okay. But just for the benefit of the audience, would you describe the relationship with Bellows Falls and Saxon River?
Saxon River is a village in the town of Rockingham, just like Bellows Falls is a village in the town of Rockingham.
How would you describe their differences?
Saxon River certainly doesn't have the poor group of poverty that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
A little more well-to-do. I don't spend a lot of time in Saxon River, so I don't know the politics of the community there.
I do, but they're boring. I do just because I shoot video at trustees meetings over there. And they have really just two issues that they ever talk about. It's their water treatment plant and this park that they're building by the river. And they have engaged architectural firms and other experts to help them create the best riverside park that they can. So, a major concern for Saxon's River is making the place look nice. And, there is some of that in Bellows Falls. We have our historic downtown area that we call the Square. And if you go to municipal meetings here, you will hear people fretting over, the loss of the historic sort of patina and the thing that's going to attract tourists to stop in the town and get out and take a look, maybe get something to eat, maybe go into a shop or two. It is that historic New England character which brings in money from the outside, which, you know, Fellows Falls needs, but so do all the other communities around here. So this person who objected to your describing the village that you live in as poverty-stricken lives in the more affluent, more picturesque New England-looking Saxons River village a few miles away. But she did take you up on your offer to come and sit, or, you know, stand in your lawn and look around at the world that you see every day. What impression did she communicate to you about that?
After she expressed her extreme displeasure in me describing the village of Bellows Falls as poverty-stricken, she went on to say that she lives in Saxons River. She has a home for sale. Mm-hmm. At one point, it was $480,000, and it has continually dropped down. And I believe that her concern is her property value, which is a concern that I have as well. I live in a poverty-stricken pocket in the village of Bellows Falls, but my property value is just as important to me as somebody else's property values in the village of Saxons River.
Right. You know, when I was first thinking about moving to Vermont, and it was always going to be somewhere in southeastern Vermont, but it wasn't necessarily going to be Bellows Falls. And I was looking around online, and I was also, you know, reading people's opinions online. The phrase that came up again and again to describe Bellows Falls by people who don't live in Bellows Falls but who live nearby is armpit. People in Brattleboro, people in places like Grafton, very, you know, kind of upscale places. Although Brattleboro certainly has their share of, you know, drug addiction and people involved in the criminal justice system. Bellows Falls just doesn't have that same level of historic New England charm untainted by all the problems of, you know, 21st century long-term economic stagnation. A lot of people who own homes in Bellows Falls, they're second homes. You know, they live in New York City or Boston or not in Bellows Falls, in Vermont. Lots of homes in Vermont and in Rockingham, you know, not in the villages, but out in the county. These are nice homes that are owned by people who don't live there year-round. And, you know, they have a very different experience of Vermont. And for those folks, particularly the ones who are not even, you know, full-time Vermonters, who come to their very nice, well-maintained second homes, you know, to enjoy the beauty of Vermont when it's temperate, might come into Bellows Falls and look around, and I could well imagine that the phrase that would leap to mind is armpit. Because so many places are in need of repair, so much flaking paint, so many, not so many, but there are some you know, standout buildings which have been abandoned or even condemned. The village is trying to get somebody to buy them for a dollar, you know, just to tear down the building that's there and, you know, put up something that will generate some tax revenue. But Grafton doesn't have that. You know?
We are a magnet here.
Yeah.
We are a magnet for poverty. We are the community that offers the housing.
Mm-hmm. Is that it? Is that the keystone? Is the fact that there is so much rental housing available here?
Yes. Yes. That the rental housing is available here. And people from the outer towns, you know, they flock here for the services, the stores, the hospital, mental health services, etc.
So the person who came from Saxons River, who's looking to sell what used to be a $500,000 home and is now worth considerably less, when she stood on your lawn and looked around to see the Bellows Falls that you see day in and day out, did she admit to any change of viewpoint?
No, she wanted to walk around the village that she grew up in and point out all the affluent people.
Which they are certainly here.
And I wanted to walk around the village and point out the people that are struggling, that are living in the rental housing. She wasn't up for that.
I see. It's really, I mean, we should explain to the listeners that Bellows Falls is 1.4 square miles. It's not a square, but, you know, that's how you measure surface area. We are squeezed in between the terrain over on the west side and the Connecticut River on the east side. And you know, you described the place, the part of the village that you live in is, you know, a poorer or more struggling portion, but the nice portions are a stone's throw away. I mean, we really are pressed up cheek by jowl here. You don't really have the wrong side of the tracks in the village because the village just isn't big enough to have a wrong side of the tracks.
It's difficult. Taxes are high here.
Mm-hmm.
Employment is scarce. People are struggling, at least the people that I see in my neighborhood. And that may not be true for all the neighborhoods here in the village, but for my neighborhood, what I see on a day-to-day basis are people struggling, and not necessarily by reasons of their own. A lot of mental health issues,
mm-hmm.
a lot of substance abuse, a lot of abuse of the system.
What do you mean by that?
It's hard to describe. You have to sit and watch and see
mm-hmm.
and listen and hear what people, hear how they live. I've heard the first of the month in Bellows Falls by many people described as payday. That makes me cringe.
Mm-hmm. What happens on payday? People get their support payments, but...
You will see a bustle in the village on the first, second, and third of the month when people get their payday, quote-unquote. They're off across the river to get their cartons of cigarettes. They're off to the store to buy their necessities that they need. It's a regular routine schedule here in Bellows Falls.
So the package store right across the river there in New Hampshire, what's that store called?
We have Five Star and State Line.
Yeah, they probably staff expecting an influx the first of the month.
They do a very brisk business.
Yeah. We should mention for people who are not from around here that there is no sales tax in New Hampshire. So on cigarettes, which are very expensive, that makes a difference. It makes it worth crossing the river.
People can walk across the river, 5-minute walk, save $10 on a carton of cigarettes.
Yeah.
A couple of dollars on a 6-pack of beer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm from the struggling side of town. I struggle here to pay my taxes. I struggle here to pay my water and sewer. It's disheartening to see so many people that are living in our community that don't have to contribute. Their rents are paid for, their food is paid for, their insurance is paid for. And that's a great thing. I'm a humanitarian. Mm-hmm. I believe that people need these services. I struggle to pay my bills, and then I have nothing. Other people are living as well as I am and have nothing.
But do nothing.
And do nothing.
Yeah. Vermont is the bluest of blue states, and it has a very generous social safety net.
And I think that's a large attraction why so many people come here from bordering states.
Geography is particularly cruel in that respect, in that, as you say, you can walk across the river to New Hampshire, you know, on foot, across the bridge, 10 minutes to no sales tax paradise, basically, and then walk back over here to, you know, but over in New Hampshire, they don't have all the social services, you know, the developed social safety net. It's very different.
It's my understanding that it's harder to get those social services.
Well, it's a red state. You know, that's a Trump state right across the river. But, you know, the upside of that is no sales tax. So if you can live here in Blue Vermont and have the you know, the generous aid from the state, and then walk across the river to the no sales tax, so it's really, if you're looking to get by on next to nothing, it's a pretty good situation.
Unfortunately,
yeah. So you have compassion for the people in need here. When we finish recording, we're gonna go across the street and have lunch at our place, which is, you know, what it's called. What is that establishment?
Our place is the community kitchen, otherwise known as a soup kitchen.
Right.
And it serves the needs of a lot of people that fall through the cracks, that may not be able to cook for themselves or have the financial resources to have food through the month. And it's a great place. We are very lucky to have that facility in our community because of the large number of people that need those services.
And from what I hear, the food is quite good.
They have a pretty good chef over there.
And they have people supplying locally grown fresh ingredients a lot of the time.
Just saw a couple of crates of fresh corn in there as we came by.
Yeah. So when you use the phrase soup kitchen, you know, it's probably that to me anyway, that phrase invokes, you know, soup and bread and just the basics that you need to not starve to death that day. And our place is doing quite a bit more than that.
At times they can.
Yeah.
I've also seen when they don't have as much to supply to the public. And the only thing available may be soup and bread.
Okay. So we walked in there and decided not to record because, you know, it's a lot of chatter and kitchen noise going on. But we were in there for just a minute, and you said hello to several people. A lot of familiar faces there.
Lots of familiar faces there.
What's the vibe of the place?
It's a very welcoming vibe. Mm-hmm. Their door is always open. Not 24 hours, but is open for anyone who needs their services or doesn't need their services but still wants to have a meal or maybe pick a few things off the food shelf to bring home.
So that is as welcoming and wonderful as it is, contributes to the thing which causes you some psychological grief, which is that, you know, people who are not struggling and really putting in the effort the way you are to make a life and do almost as well with very little effort.
There is some truth to that.
I worked 3 jobs. Until recently, I was working 4 jobs. I recently had to make a fairly substantial change in my diet just because I couldn't afford to eat the way that I had been eating. But I've known about our place, but I've been reluctant to come over. And I'm not sure what the reluctance is other than, you know, I don't consider myself, even though I'm often living on the edge, to be the sort of person that takes advantage of that. And I'm going to eat there today. I'm looking forward to it.
I don't consider myself a needy person, mm-hmm. but I actually enjoy going there. Maybe on a day like today when it's very hot and humid and I don't want to cook indoors.
Yeah.
There could be a meal already there waiting for me.
I will say I'm not a property taxpayer. I live in an apartment. I live at the medical center, actually, in the same building with River Valley Credit Union. There's 2 apartments in there. I have 1.
That I did not know.
Yeah. And the other is occupied somebody who's wearing an ankle bracelet. You know what I mean?
The ankle bracelets are prevalent here in our community.
They are.
I've actually seen individuals wearing one on each ankle.
Mm. One might have been an alcohol sensor. They have devices that they can strap to your wrist or ankle that monitor your blood alcohol content.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So if you're out on furlough or parole, you're not allowed to drink alcohol, even a beer. It's a violation if it sends you back to jail. And it's a temptation that is stronger than a lot of people are equipped to deal with, and they go back to jail. Beer costs them. Even though they're wearing the ankle monitor, they know they're going to get caught.
There's a lot going on in my community that even I'm unaware of after 20 years.
Well, the municipal meetings are boring, so it's hard to stay tuned into them. I'm fortunate in that I get paid to do it. So that's where a lot of my information comes from.
I watch them on TV.
I'm the guy behind the camera.
Years ago, I had a grievance with the town, and when I went to speak about my grievance, they shut off the local Channel 8 TV camera.
Really?
And let me speak first. And then they ushered me essentially out of the hall because they didn't want to hear my grievance about the police department. And it was a strong grievance. It was a complaint on an officer who I felt didn't respond timely. And when they did, I had to call the police department several times to get a response. And when they did respond, they threatened to arrest me. Calling the police department several times, I felt threatened by an individual outside of my wife and mine's business. And after that experience at that meeting, I've never returned.
How long ago was that?
12 or 13 years ago.
They have to operate according to certain procedures, or they're in violation of, you know, state statute. And the only time I'm supposed to turn off the camera is if they go into executive session. If somebody is saying something at a meeting, particularly, you know, in an open public comment portion of the meeting, it's my responsibility to share that.
I think that's maybe why they had me speak first, so mm-hmm. that they could let me speak my piece and then get me out. Mm. But they did not record what I had to say because it was a grievance against the village police department. And we all know there are some cliques here in Bellows Falls. Mm-hmm. People are taking care of other people.
Without getting yourself in trouble, how much more can you say about that?
I really can't say a lot, other than I really wanted to voice my concern publicly. It took every ounce of motivation and energy and to get past my anxieties to go talk publicly about my experience. And after I was basically shut down and not listened to, I understood what was going on here with these small town politics. Unless you're somebody, they don't necessarily want to hear you.
Was Ron Lake the police chief back then?
Keith Clark.
Oh, who is now the sheriff.
The same man who tried to bring the prison into the community.
Okay. You know, I interviewed Keith Clark before I ever moved to Vermont. And he said all the right things about the drug war. I'm categorically opposed to the drug war, have been for decades. I think making drugs illegal, it just exacerbates all the harms. And it doesn't cut off supply. And it devotes resources, like town meeting last year, Ron Lake got up, and this was in, you know, before marijuana had been made legal. And he said to the assembled townspeople, call your representatives, call the governor, tell them not to make marijuana legal, because if it's made legal, I have to get rid of my drug dog. Because he's trained to sniff a certain suite of smells, and we can't tell him ignore this one and just tune into the rest. What a small-minded, narrow vision, egomaniacal thing to say. I mean, let's determine public policy on the basis of Ron Lake, the needs of Ron Lake's drug dog. And you wouldn't believe, maybe you would, the amount of money that this village spends on that dog. And Ron Lake brags at these meetings in public, on camera, he brags that the village of Bellows Falls sends more seized narcotics to the state lab for analysis than any other municipality in the state, including Burlington.
I have a difficult time believing that.
Well, it's his passion. And the village of Bellows Falls is not in any financial position to continue the decades-long failed experiment in basically curing drug addiction by locking people up. And yet that's Ron Lake's dedication, and when he gets up and he gives that speech, it blows my mind, but people respond. They're like, yeah, you're right. Let's give that man everything he needs. And, you know, I see him and talk to him all the time, so he's not a demon. He's just a guy who's got something that he wants to do, and he knows the words to say to make people open up the village coffers and pay for it.
Many people think he just goes through the motions.
Yeah.
It's true.
He may be going through the motions on certain things, but basically, you know, being so close to the southern border of the state, and there's really not that many ways for people coming up from, say, New Jersey, you know, bringing heroin up to Vermont. There's not that many ways for them to come up. They're basically coming up on I-91. And so, you know, state police are sitting on I-91 looking for those people. Sheriff Clark's deputies are sitting on I-91 looking for those people. And Chief Lake's officers are sitting on I-91 looking for that car going by with a young white girl driving and a black man in the passenger seat with the seat leaned all the way back, so he's trying to stay out of sight. But the cops, I mean, I've spoken to a state trooper who said that's exactly what they're looking for. And 99 times out of 100, you stop that particular pair of people and there's heroin in the car. And everybody wants a piece of that. Every law enforcement agency wants a piece of that. And that's the priority.
We've got to get those drugs that are killing people off the streets.
But the business model for the drug dealers, the ones hiring those people driving those cars, is a certain percentage of them are going to get caught. So we just send enough that, you know, we can supply the customer base, even though a certain number of our low-level disposable employees are going to end up in jail and those, you know, their cargo will be seized. It's just part, it's like a big corporation that knows that they're going to have to pay some fines, and they just budget it.
The cost of doing business.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my rant. Sheriff Clark at least says the right things on that topic. He acknowledges the damage that that program, the drug war interdiction program, does to our communities. Chief Lake does not. Anyway, that's my rant. I will definitely not be putting that on the radio, so you're never going to take any heat from that.
Sorry, I didn't have much to say.
No, that's great.
I'm actually listening to you being educated. I'm actually impressed by your knowledge and our inner workings of what's going on here in a lot of different levels. But I'll tell you this, I would not be a public, you wouldn't see me speaking out on the Facebook page right now, but that Phoenix House has me concerned that they're going to be churning people into our community with these drug problems. These women are going to have husbands and boyfriends that are going to be coming here to visit. Where are they going to stay? Are they going to be sleeping in their cars for these 1 and 2 day visits? You know, there's so many unanswered questions. And their contacts, you know, they're coming from Burlington, Bennington, Barrie, all these different places. They're going to bring those contacts to here, to Bellows Falls, because we're going to be essentially the flagship for the women alcohol, drug, and rehab facilities. If they shut down in Brattleboro, they're coming here. We're going to be the flagship. Why are they leaving that world-class hospital campus down there?
Not by choice, is my understanding.
That's the retreat is saying it's Phoenix House's choice.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix House is saying the retreat needs the space. Did you see the letter that was going around? I should have brought my information. There was a letter sent to me for saying, as an abutting property owner, you know, this was after the appeal was filed. Now, nobody heard a word about this Phoenix House thing. The reason it got busted into the public, you heard that one little thing at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually listening to that on TV. It didn't really catch my ear. You know, it just kind of was fast. And It wasn't a lot of discussion on it. But it was July 10th. I was outside in my yard, and I saw a lot of milling around going around on those two buildings. A lot of professional-looking people, clipboards, a couple of suits. And, you know, I went over there and introduced myself. And I said, hey, what's going on here? Yeah, we're Phoenix House. We're looking at buying these two houses and bringing the Tapestry program here. You know, and that's got all the information that they wanted to volunteer. So I went and asked Edgar Greason. He's the guy who owns the building. So I asked one of his employees, who I know. I said, Joel, what's going on here? What's happening? When are they closing on these buildings? Because I hadn't heard a word. Joel said, they're supposed to close today. I said, today? This was the 10th of July. So at that point, I was concerned. I'm like, this is getting slipped under the rug here. I haven't been told anything is in the butter. I haven't heard anything publicly through the paper or through my town committees or, you know, the select board or anything public. And, you know, because of the activity that goes on over there on Underhill Avenue, it looks like a frat house over there. I don't know how many guys they got living in there, 10, 12, 14, I don't know. But you know, they're walking by all the time. They're ever present in our community. You know, so I called the lady down, Susan Small here down at the Reformer, and I said, can you guys do a story on, you know, kind of break this? What's going on with this Phoenix House? And that's what happened. I didn't really like my picture on the front page of the paper or anything like that, but that's how it happened, and that was fine if that's what it takes to get this exposure going. That was the 10th. I called the 11th or 12th. They did their story. On the 13th, I filed the appeal, and that was after talking to Deb Wright in length over my concerns, and she said she couldn't be involved, but she encouraged the appeal, and I said that's what I would like to do, you know, to at least get some streamlined transparency since nobody's talking to us. Of course, a couple days ago, I got a letter from Phoenix House, being one of the abutters. Well, you know, you're our potential neighbor. We want to let you know that, you know, we're this great place, and we're coming in, and we should be rolling out the red carpet for them. Not like that, but that's basically how they busted it to us as a neighbor. And there's just such a lack of information, and I'm troubled. I have a 7-year-old daughter. We a little further from that wall to where we sit, from my home, my front yard, to their facilities. You know, and you're going to bring in 35 women or men. I mean, it doesn't matter if they're men or women to me personally, mm-hmm. but 35 women.
Women in this case.
In this case, who are involved in the legal system, involved in, you know, obviously the heroin epidemic is what is blowing these types of facilities.
Tapestry
up.
Is explicitly a recovery program for people with drug addiction issues.
Right, yeah. Right, right. And
you're not stereotyping. I mean, that's who this program serves.
And nobody's, and as a resident, I'm concerned. Nobody's telling us anything. Why, you know, you got the retreat. They're leaving the place where there's hospitals and doctors and places where they can detox and deal with, you know, redoing it again, doing the drugs again, and, you know, just all everything that they need essentially is there. And I think they're being forced out for whatever reasons that are unknown yet. But there was a conflict, you know. Like I said, Tapestry claims that the retreat needs the space, and the retreat claims that Tapestry wanted to relocate. So there was a, you know, somebody's not telling the truth there.
Right.
But 35.
Clearly, some bridges have been burned, though.
I think so. And I'm not the only person who's saying I'm concerned. There's been a lot of people coming by my house who have been, you know, involved with the boards in the past and stuff. A lot of officials, past officials in the town, and a couple of current officials.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expressing their concern as well. But because Phoenix House hasn't proposed any public plan for what they're doing, nobody dares speak. And I've taken heat. I've taken a lot of heat from people here in the community saying that I have no compassion for drug addicts, that I'm close-minded, and that I'm that type of person. I'm one of those people who doesn't want it in my backyard. Well, I have to put my loyalty with my home, my family, and my neighborhood, and my community before mm-hmm. I can stake any loyalty in the rehabilitation of drug offenders. I'm concerned. I have a 7-year-old daughter. You know, it's not as if these people are going to go about their day. We're not going to interact. They are on our street within a stone's throw. We are going to talk. We are going to communicate. We are going to develop friendships. People are going to come and go. There are going to be problems. 35 women, that's bringing 35 attitudes into town. You know, there are people on our street that are recovering addicts now. And those are 35 potential triggers for those recovering addicts that we are already dealing with to potentially go back to drugs.
So I mentioned earlier that I'm involved with the Restorative Justice Center and that I do these COSA meetings, which is basically, you know, volunteers giving time and listening to and, you know, supporting, not in a financial sense, but, you know, in an emotional sense, people who are working to integrate back into the community. And almost all of them have drug dependency issues. And, you know, the young man that we're dealing with right now is, you know, his weakness is heroin. And one of the only woman on the circle, she does it because she has 3 children, all of whom have been through the criminal justice system and all of whom, you know, have had heroin issues. So she has, you couldn't have more compassion for drug addicts than she has. Her own children, her passion for this stems from, you know, her own children's involvement. She doesn't like Tapestry. She doesn't want Tapestry to have a program here in Bellows Falls. She describes Tapestry as being abusive to the people in their care and needlessly brutal, you know, in administering discipline. The guy who runs the circle, who is a former parole officer and who got so disgusted with the criminal justice system that now, even though he's funded by a grant from the Department of Corrections, he's largely, you know, the advocate for, you know, somebody who is subject to the criminal justice system. You know, he's on the side of the person on furlough. He is looking to help this person succeed, where the actual official Department of Corrections is looking to catch them in an infraction and put them back in prison. He doesn't like Tapestry. He doesn't think they should be here. This is a guy who's devoted his life to helping people who are getting out of the criminal justice system or trying to. He doesn't want to hear.
know, Tapestry, they must take their main form of income must be insurance, which must be provided primarily through the state.
I don't know that that's the case. I haven't investigated that, so I couldn't speak on that at all.
And there's so many questions that we have.
Who's the Brattleboro Reformer reporter you talked to?
Susan Small here.
Okay. Give her a call.
Chris Ratter is her photographer. He's a great guy. If it wasn't for the Brattleboro Reformer busting that story, mm-hmm. I think we'd all still be waiting to hear something. You know, luckily, there was a story, you know, where the Phoenix House had to respond to some degree. So at least that brings public knowledge and awareness that what their intention is. But Bellas Falls, struggling the way it is, I don't think we can absorb those 35 women without great social impact. And they're going to come with their families. They're going to be trying to get custody of their children again. These are not all going to be young women with no children. These are going to be women of all social dynamics. And they are going to be taught not to go back to the places where they used to use and offend. Mm-hmm. And they will probably be looking for housing here in Bellas Falls. This may have a multi-generational effect here in this village that is already suffering unproportionately. You know, is a good word, I think. We are mm-hmm. suffering unproportionately some of these social issues. We've lost a lot of people here in Bellas Falls, a lot of young people to the heroin. I wouldn't know heroin if I saw it. When I grew up, heroin was a bad word. You know, it wasn't around, for one, but it was a bad word. We grew up drinking beer and smoking pot. So it's pretty scary. I mean, I would think that any drug that kills people would be a motivating factor to get help, you know, at some level. I understand it's hard to get the help. You're addicted. You're afraid of coming off the drugs. But damn it, people are dying. Death is no joke. Yeah. It's the end. You can't come back.
And it's final as it gets.
I just, you know, just went to a service of a guy I grew up with. Came from a great family. He was 48 years old, and he died here recently in Vermont. They found him in his car dead. And we buried him a few weeks ago. And that was a heartbreaking event. I apologize for not being a very vocal person. It's, you know, I was really captivated by listening to you. I am not in denial that I am an undereducated, low-income resident here in the village of Bellas Falls, but I have a huge stake here with my family, my home, and my future, and I want to preserve and protect that the best I can. And even though I'm not the best person to raise the red flag, unfortunately, that's the position I'm in because I'm on the front lines of this, with them being right in my front yard.
It is your perspective that I'm interested in, not your erudition. So
excellent, excellent.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you.
That was Darren Lenoir, and I had to do some editing to hide the fact that I called him Daniel to start with, because Daniel Lenoir is a Canadian musician and a longtime favorite of mine. And as I record these words, I'm sitting in front of my laptop at a stand-up desk, although I'm sitting on a tall stool in front of the stand-up desk, and I'm looking out the window, and out in the parking lot, behind the building where I live, there's a grassy portion, a grassy patch, surrounded by trees, and there's a picnic table there. And there's a young man sitting there. He looks to be in his late teens or early 20s. And he's been sitting there for a very long time. I don't know who he is, but he looks troubled. His body language tells me that he is experiencing some kind of psychological turmoil. He's biting his fingernails and spitting them on the grass in front of him. And I know that where I live here in Bellas Falls, Vermont, it's a very dangerous place to be a young person right now. If you're not college-bound, if you are not getting out, this is a dangerous place to try to make a life. Many difficult obstacles stand between you and the establishment of yourself as a prosperous, respectable, middle-class person. The young man is now clasping his hands in front of him and has his elbows resting on his thighs and his head, I would say bowed, but more like hanging. I don't know his story, but I doubt his prospects are bright. Although he might be. Bright, that is. Anyway, after the conversation that I recorded with Darren, we left the radio station, which is basically just a couple hundred yards away from our place, the so-called soup kitchen. We went over there and had a very good meal. But the very first person that Darren said hello to was somebody who was standing in line waiting for the food with us. This guy was an older fellow, big overgrown beard, more overgrown than the one that I just shaved off. And Darren thought he was drunk. It turns out later he'd been smoking weed earlier in the day and doing so from his front porch and happily waving at the police as they drove by, because the recreational use of marijuana is now legal for adults over 21 in the state of Vermont. But this guy, who to my eyes, and again, I come from a certain socioeconomic background, this guy looked like somebody I would expect to see at the soup kitchen. As soon as Darren mentioned the Phoenix House issue, this old fella said, "Well, we sure don't need any more of those people in town." So it goes. Those are the terms in which people discuss this issue around here. So on the question of compassion for people with substance abuse issues, as you well know, I am opposed to the war on drugs. I think that drug prohibition does more harm than good. I think drug treatment is infinitely preferable to jail, although I'm one of those libertarian weirdos who thinks that drug treatment shouldn't be pushed on anybody, that it should be there, it should be made available for people who have come to the decision on their own that they want it. But I don't think that that the only options for somebody who is using heroin are jail or drug rehab. But all that aside, if I know somebody to be using heroin, I don't believe a thing they say. The words coming out of their mouth mean nothing. They are just saying what they think they need to say in order to get what they desperately need. And even if somebody is in recovery, which is to say they're not using, but they still have a problem, I would be hesitant to invite them into my home or into my life for fear that they would relapse, and when they do, they would see me as a resource to mine in order to feed their need. And I think that the people advancing what I've been calling a conspiracy theory have made a pretty strong case that Bellows Falls explicitly in the higher levels of state government has been designated as a sacrifice zone, a dumping ground for people that the rest of the state has given up on and doesn't want in their own communities. It's a beautiful New England mill town. Historic, walkable, lovely. I recently had my youngest son here for 2 or 3 weeks, and it was great being able to walk from my apartment down to the square to see a movie or go to Subway or basically just go anywhere, you know, without the use of a car. And I think my son had a good time here, but he would never go anywhere without me. You know, there was a lot of time when I had to be here working, and he, you know, it is his habit, it is his lifestyle, because he lives in a place where he can't walk to anywhere, to just be on the computer all day. But I tried to encourage him to get outside here by himself and walk around, and he just wouldn't. And I think part of that is just that he's more comfortable looking at a screen than he is out navigating the physical world. But also, I realize that a lot of the people you see walking around here on the street are pretty scary looking. They're obviously not doing well, and he is obviously not of their tribe. And as much as I would love to see my kids more often, I would have great reservation about bringing them here to Bellows Falls, knowing that, you know, eventually they wouldn't be with me, they would be off on their own. And the hazards here are many and serious. And I realize that this young man sitting out at the picnic table, agitated and shifting from one troubled pose to the next, is somebody's son. A person for whom somebody certainly had and maybe still has high hopes. You know, I'm 50 now, and I'm sure everybody, when they reach the age of 50, looks around at the world that they're in and says, this isn't the world I grew up in. This isn't the country I know from my youth. And I guess, you know, for everybody who says that, it's true. Cycles progress, trends come and go, big historical events happen, culture changes, things change. But for young people, and particularly for young men, it seems like a very perilous time. Far more perilous than it was for me and my friends when I was a young man. And I did some stupid things. Let me tell you. I took risks, physical risks, like nobody's business. It's just, you know, the environment in which I lived was not one replete with heroin and other synthetic opioids. Like Darren said in the interview, when I was a kid, we drank beer and we smoked weed. And later, when I got into psychedelics, I think I've told this story before, I did have to go to the basement apartment of a heroin junkie looking for acid one time, and that was a horrific experience. As willing to take risks as I was back then, I wanted absolutely nothing to do with anything related to heroin. And now here, it is shockingly common and a topic of daily conversation among everybody. I took my son to a town across the river in New Hampshire when he was here, and we were sitting in a fast food restaurant, and I couldn't help but overhear a woman at a table next to us was reading something off of her phone, and it was a letter or a note written by somebody who was one of the last to see a loved one who overdosed and died and was found in a field. And this woman, who I would guess was in her late 20s, considerably overweight, was choking back the tears as she read this text off her phone to the man that she was sitting with. I mean, if you're over 40, isn't it bizarre that there are places in the U.S. where everybody knows somebody who has lost somebody to heroin overdose? I mean, aside from being terrible, isn't that just alien and surreal? Do me a favor. If you do go onto Facebook and check out the Future of Bellows Falls group there, if you don't live around here, please don't chime in and try to drop science on anybody. You will see some ugly attitudes on display. You will see some people struggling with a situation that is real and tangible in their lives. And if the enlightened attitudes that you would want to impart to them don't come from hard-won personal experience, just don't. You know, I'm not shy about speaking my mind, and I do it as a profession. But I'm keeping a low profile in that discussion. All right, well, this has been maybe an overly somber episode, particularly here at the end. The next episode will also feature an interview, and some of the topics discussed will probably also be somewhat depressing, but they'll at least be a bit more abstract, more big picture. If there is some angle, some point of view on this subject matter that you think I need to consider, do let me know. And before I go, let me just pitch the Patreon subscription option. There's something going on. People are reporting with a variety of podcatchers, most notably iTunes, that they are unable to get the most recent episode of the CROM Vault podcast. Nobody on the Patreon feed is reporting that problem. Patreon provides you with an individual feed that you use to subscribe to the podcast. And, you know, they have teams of programmers, you know, devoted to keeping that feed consistent with all the changes in all the major podcatchers. And while I encourage everyone to not do this at once, let me just remind you that when you subscribe through CRealm.com, you're paying for the month to come. When you subscribe through Patreon, you are paying for the month just past. So when you switch from one to the other, you essentially get a free month, and thereafter it's $7 a month instead of $8. You are welcome to continue to subscribe in the way that you are subscribed now, but there will be service interruptions from time to time, as you know, no website is ever finished, is ever in a stable state, because it connects to so many other things which are always constantly changing. So something is always going to break, and unlike Patreon, I don't have a team of programmers at the ready keeping my site functional. You know, I have a webmaster. She maintains many sites, and you know, sometimes it requires quite a bit of investigation for her to even figure out what's broken, much less how to fix it. So if you've been frustrated by the, you know, password-protected nature of this podcast and its and how it interfaces with your podcatcher of choice, do consider making that move to Patreon. All right, that's all for this episode. As always, thank you very much for subscribing, and I will talk to you again quite soon.